Welcome to Hungry for More, the podcast where two friends drink their daily smoothies and dive deep into all things health and lifestyle. I'm Jessica, and I'm a holistic health coach.
And I'm Alisa, a certified life coach. And we believe in always being hungry for more because life is too short to settle for less. Let's get started.
I did it without reading it.
Oh, good job. No, I still peeked.
I didn't know if it was on the actual notes or not, so I just started talking.
Yeah, I'm proud of myself.
After how many, 70 episodes almost?
Yeah, we definitely should know it. Good job. Good job.
Good job. Yay. All right. Well, we are here. We had a really great interview with your friend, Gemma James, a fellow coach that you met in your coaching program. Is that right?
Yeah, super excited.
And this whole episode is about anxiety. It was an interesting conversation. And it was also, I'll let Alisa tell you that it was a little hectic on her end. Speaking of anxiety.
Speaking of anxiety, with my baby crying in the next room. Oh gosh, that gave me anxiety. It's a new kind of anxiety. But you know, I want to be that type of mom to like, I want to give my husband the time to figure it out. You know, I don't want her to just rely on me, and I want to give him the freedom. But you know, there are just certain times where she needs me. So I had to step away a few times, but it's still a great interview because Jess was there to handle it all. And I popped in between and baby was there. So
yeah, you're going to hear Miley a little bit. Yeah, it was a good interview. You did a good job. I think that, you know, I think as she gets older and older, Eldon will be able to handle certain parts. But in the very beginning, mama is needed, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. I think that's what we need to realize is that that's okay. You know, she's still learning too. It's only been 4 weeks. So we're all learning.
We're all learning. This is the new Hungry for More with Alisa as a mom.
Yes.
So okay. Are you drinking anything today?
Actually, so now during my postpartum time, I haven't in the beginning, you know, couldn't get up much. And my husband, who's always been great at cooking and providing for me and all of that, but so he had to learn how to make juice for me, which, you know, he makes smoothies for himself, but now he had to learn how to make juices so I could have my celery juice. So, and then he now really got into it as well. And he loves making like a beet juice. So, but that gives me kind of an upset stomach early in the morning. So I haven't actually had it yet, but after we stop recording, he will make me a beet juice. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. Beets can be kind of intense on the digestive system, and it will probably make your whole tomorrow's bowel movement system work very well.
Yep. Yep. How about you? Do you have anything?
Currently just plain old water. But this morning I actually had this massive bunch of celery. It made me easily 24 ounces of celery, wow. Which is, we love that around here. If you can have such a massive bunch, that doesn't happen that often. So
nice.
And then I had my heavy metal detox smoothie, and I'm actually doing some of the beginning of the medical medium 369 cleanse right now. I don't know if I'll do the whole thing. It's really just, I went on a little trip with my family to Indian Wells to see the pro tennis last week. And I feel like I ate out a lot and I just need a little bit of a refresher reset. So.
And that's so great. You always know how to reset and detox and do what you need to do for yourself to feel better.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's not restrictive. It's just getting off of the junk food and the food out at the moment.
Yeah. And are you hungry for anything?
Oh, well, I'm hungry for Alisa to get more sleep and to feel a little bit better. But for myself, I'm good. You know what? I'm happy with the way today went. I'm happy that we're recording, and we didn't know how it was going to go, and we're making it work.
And I love that. You don't always have to be hungry for more, right? Even though this is our podcast and we are all about wanting more in life, but it's also okay to just be satisfied and happy.
Yeah. What are you hungry for?
Yeah, more sleep. So the thing I want to clarify though is like, it's not even that she doesn't sleep well. She actually sleeps really well for just being 4 weeks old. She had 5 hours last night and then another three, which is really good. But I just have sleep problems. Like I don't fall asleep in between. So that's really on me and not on her. But that just really sucks, to be honest, that I'm not sleeping when the baby's sleeping. Yeah, and just getting into a groove, you know, also with my husband, he's trying so hard, and like I just want them to kind of find their way, you know, Miley and my husband, and yeah, just finding our way. We're still figuring it out. She's super sweet and cute, but of course it's hard at times. So yeah, and I'm hungry for my trip coming up in May. I need to book it. I need to do that. Haven't had a chance. So
Yeah, we're tell everybody where you're going. I've seen your Instagram, but
Well, for sure, Portugal and Germany, but now I'm still trying to figure out if I'm also going to go to Austria with my mom and possibly to Croatia also with Eldon. So I'm really trying to make it a bigger thing, because Eldon is off and we'll never have this opportunity again where he has, you know, time off from work where I'm not working. So yeah, I'm not going to waste time. You know me.
yeah, Miley's going to have been to more countries than me by the time she's 3 months
One. Yeah.
old.
Okay. Should we get started?
Yeah, let's dive into the interview. We hope that you enjoy this conversation about anxiety with anxiety mindset coach, Gemma James.
Okay. Here we are with Gemma James, the anxiety mindset coach. Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are so excited. I have to say, I think especially I am excited because we have known each other for a few years. We both got certified as life coaches, and that's how we met. And it's so good to just meet fellow coaches again and see where they are in life and with their coaching programs. And it's just so good to see you and so excited to talk about what you are all up to and the topic of anxiety. And yeah, it's just been great to catch up and have you on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And likewise, very nice to catch up. And it's such an amazing time in your life.
It is. I'm assuming you're referring to my baby.
I am.
Yes,
The
my
ever so slight change lately.
slight change. Yes, my husband is taking over right now while we're recording, which is amazing. Baby's not crying right now. I'm really happy. I can change any time, but it's definitely exciting times. And yeah, do you want to tell us a little bit more about how you got to become an anxiety mindset coach?
Absolutely. So, I have experienced anxiety for as long as I can remember. Throughout my childhood, teens, sort of into my 20s and 30s, and then actually when I was pregnant with my son, I experienced anxiety like never before, and it was just constantly panicking that something was going to happen to him. That I wasn't going to be able to grow him fully, that something would happen and I would end up losing the baby, or that I wouldn't be able to give birth, something happened to me, and all these fears that I was very much brushed off as, you're a first-time mom, it's perfect to be worried. And when actually I was experiencing crippling anxiety and also OCD. So I used to quite literally obsess over his movements to the point that I would track every single slight movement he would have throughout the day. I would be obsessing around thinking my waters were going to break, or that I was going to have a bleed or something like that. And I had convinced myself that once he was born, all of this would go away and I would be absolutely fine. And I had him at home. I had, everything was fine, gave birth, perfectly healthy baby. And then the anxiety intensified tenfold and then become focused on me, focused on worried about my health. Your body changes so much when you get pregnant. And postpartum, it's like things do not go back. And then you've almost got different things coming out of different places than ever was before. Your boobs are doing things that you never thought was possible. And in amongst all this stuff, you're like trying to get to grips with what you've kind of been left with after assuming that everything's going to get better after you give birth. And actually, it's 10 times worse because you've got no sleep, and sleep deprivation is a massive trigger for anxiety anyway. And after I had my son, I definitely hit an all-time low, and I've never felt so alone and so isolated in all my life. And I've got the most loving, supportive partner going, but even he's like, "Oh, what do I do? How can I help you?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I don't know how to help myself." And even as someone we've, by this point, I'd had like 11, maybe 12 years of counseling. So it wasn't like I didn't understand the concept behind what I was experiencing, but it was just, I was so deep in the pit of despair, I couldn't get myself out of it. And I did obviously get myself out of it, clearly, because I'm okay now. But it was off the back of that and that experience that I was just like, I don't want another person to have to feel that lonely and that lost. And even if I can stop one person feeling like that, like, that's great. But my ambition, my goal is to help no one. I don't want anyone to feel like that, because it's, unless you've been there, it's so difficult to really articulate it or to really understand it. But when you feel that way, you literally feel like you're losing your mind. And when people around you are like, "Oh, don't worry about it. You know, baby's fine. You're fine. You know, nothing's going on." And you're like, "I can see that. Yeah, I'm having panic attacks every 5 minutes because I'm pretty sure someone's going to steal him, or he's going to die, or I'm going to die." Or, and it's really difficult, I think, unless you've experienced that, to really understand it. And that's kind of what spurred me on to want to be that support for others that I wish I had on my own journey. And to, I suppose, kind of be a bit of a guiding hand, if that's the right word. In that, I'm really sorry, that's a really waffly, long-winded explanation, but there you go. That is why I got into it.
Wow. Yeah, your story is so interesting, but also it's relatable. I'm not, that's not to say that people have such crippling anxiety throughout their entire lives. Not everybody, but a lot of people do. And like you said, there is such a difference between understanding that you have anxiety and maybe even other, you mentioned OCD, other compulsions or things going on, other mental, I don't want to say illnesses, but things going on that are related to it that coexist alongside of the anxiety, and they don't understand what to do about it, how to change that.
Yeah.
It's difficult as well, though, I think, because people are very blasé, I think, with the word anxiety. And it's like, it can mean so many different things, from, "Oh, I'm a bit worried about something," and people be like, "Oh, you know, I'm feeling quite anxious about that," which is an accurate word, isn't it? You know, "I'm feeling worried," or "I'm feeling anxious," or versus like, "I feel such intense anxiety, I can't leave the house."
Yeah.
Or, you know, "Oh, I'm going out to meet friends, and I fell out with this friend the other week, and I feel a bit anxious about seeing her because I don't know how she's going to react." Yet we use the same word.
Yeah.
And I think that as well can kind of muddy the waters a bit. But it's how it impacts your life, and that you can have kind of that underlying anxiety and it doesn't really affect you. It's just something you kind of get on with. And then you can have a big life event, or sometimes something seemingly innocent can happen, and it can trigger this big tidal wave of anxiety. And I think that's when you get sort of knocked over by it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great you're sharing your story, because I feel like you don't hear very often, to be honest, that women or expectant moms experience anxiety already throughout pregnancy. But I feel like that's why it needs to be talked about, because I'm sure there are women out there who experience it. And I also think, you know, postpartum, nobody wants to have postpartum anxiety or depression. And so I feel like that's also another thing is not so much talked about, because you don't want to admit that you have it, right? But the more people that say they do suffer from postpartum anxiety, the more, you know, supported you might feel. And one thing that you said I can totally relate to right now is like that feeling of being alone in it. And I luckily I can say I believe I don't have postpartum anxiety, but that feeling of being in it alone, even when you have that support, my husband is a big support for me, but he's a man, you know, he's not the one who has to literally do everything and have those like hormones crash after birth. It's something you can't even really explain until you go through it.
I think too, this episode's not specifically about postpartum, but I would say it was not spoken about a lot at all for most of time. I think people talking about it is a relatively new thing, and it's good that it's being talked about, but I still mostly only hear about it in the past tense, once people have figured it out and moved on from it. And I saw something that it takes like 2 to 7 years for your hormones to completely balance after the birth of a baby, which is crazy. 7 years. I hope it doesn't take that long for most people. But yeah, imagine 7 years of postpartum depression and you can't talk about it for that long because you haven't figured yourself out. You finally move on from it and then you speak up. That's it.
I'm 4 years postpartum and my hormones are still all over the place.
Wow. Oh my God.
Absolutely. Like, to the point, I don't even know if I'm perimenopausal or not, because the symptoms I get now, my periods are all over the place still. Like, it's not a snapback situation, not by any stretch of the imagination.
You're a different person
And
afterwards.
yeah, and I mean, we'd like another baby. I don't know when that will happen or if that will happen, but I should imagine I'm going to be in for another God knows how many years of fun after that. So it's for sure it does that, but also I think the other thing with anxiety is, like you say, it's not I still experience anxiety now. It's not something, and I'm quite transparent about that with my clients and in general, in that I don't think it's ever something that you, or definitely not in my experience, that you like get over. It's just that it becomes more manageable, and the last 4 years have been bonkers. We have been through such a weird time, and it's been a very strange time with, not being able to see family and friends and being kind of put in very unnatural circumstances when we are naturally very, we want to be around people. We want to, and a lot of us are quite tactile. We want to hug, we want to be in close proximity to those that we love. And being very isolated, that also has had a massive detrimental effect on people's mental health. And a lot of things that have happened, I think, has forced more people to be more vocal about it. But and I don't know obviously what it's like for you guys in America, but definitely over here, it's something that is like a massive like epidemic, to be honest, of people that aren't getting the support that they need with their mental health. And so, you go and see a doctor, whether it's because you're experiencing problems postpartum, whether it's because you're experiencing problems just in general, work stress too much, you've worked from home for the last 3 years, and now all of a sudden you're told you've got to go into the office. Things like that, which can cause a trigger that you go to the doctors, you're given tablets, you're sent on your way. It very much is a recipe for disaster, something I feel very passionate about, but it's the support isn't there for people in general, not just postpartum, not just pregnant, not just women in general. It's a minefield.
It's a different time. COVID changed everything. People have not bounced back. And I just saw something the other day from a social worker. This is somewhat related, but it came to my mind when you brought this up, that during COVID was the lowest reports of child abuse ever. And it's bounced back up since. And they couldn't figure out why, and they determined it was the governmental support. This is in the United States, where people were getting extra money from the government during COVID, and they were more financially stable. And so they weren't as anxious and stressed out about feeding their families and keeping the roof over your head. And people weren't allowed to be evicted during this time either, because people lost their jobs and stuff like that. And so child abuse was down. And it just goes to show how much life anxiety can affect strange things. And it's sad that unfortunately, since that support has gone away, the numbers are back to where they were.
That is really sad. It's been, yeah, it's been a very weird time. Not definitely not a lot of it, not for the better, but I think it has prompted a lot of things to be looked at, and I think that a lot of more people are becoming more happy to talk about their experiences now with mental health, and I think it is starting definitely to become less of a stigma or less of a taboo. And I think even I was literally having the same conversation actually earlier today. When I talk to people about mental health in one way or another, I'm yet to meet somebody that hasn't in some way or another had their mental health impacted by events of the last few or 4 years. And even to the point, like you've got like people like grandparents sort of age, sort of people in their 80s. And this woman, and it's like, oh, well, I can't go out without my mask on. Well, why not? Like, you're walking around on your own outside. Oh, no, because if I take me, and it's that, but now the anxiety is around wearing the mask. And I'm sure if you say to these people about, oh, you know, anxiety, oh, I don't get anxiety, don't be so daft. Like, it's that very much that generational thing, isn't it? Of, oh, we don't talk about things like that. But actually, you're walking around on your own outside wearing a mask because you're scared, because you have anxiety, because this has become a bit of a comfort blanket for you. And it's actually when you start to look at the behaviors of people, even those that maybe won't identify as experiencing things like anxiety, or it's still very prevalent everywhere you look.
You saying something like that actually brings up for me a feeling of being more patient and compassionate to people. You don't know what's going on. When I see people who are still wearing masks at this point outside by themselves, I'm like, what the hell? What is wrong with you? Why would you choose that at this point? But that's judgmental. They could be really struggling with parting with the comfort blanket. That's a good point.
Exactly, and it's when you start looking at these, like you said, the behaviors and things like that, and it's the same with other elements that we have. I think there are more people struggling than even they maybe realize.
Okay, we've gone really far down the rabbit hole
Yeah,
without even
sorry.
starting this interview. So before we continue, we start all of our interviews, Gemma, with asking you how you relate to our concept of being hungry for more.
Being hungry for more joy in life and not just settling for what you're told and not just settling for the example we were just talking about there, being given the pills and told to go and get on with it, and for being hungry to look into other ways of doing things and looking outside the box.
I love it. Us
I
too.
mean,
That's
yes,
why
always.
we're that's why we have this show, and we're never gonna settle.
Yeah,
No.
exactly. And what do you want our listeners to get out of the interview with you?
To know that if they're feeling anxious, they're not on their own. And that even if you really feel like you are in the pit of despair, there is a way out and it does get better and that it passes.
Also just wanted to clarify, this is, and just kind of did, but this is not just about postpartum anxiety or anything like that. It was just coincidence when we met you to see if you were a good fit for the show. We found out that that's, you know, is when your anxiety kind of started. But we are talking about general anxiety. So you do not have to be pregnant at this time to get something out of this episode or postpartum or anything. It was really just coincidence that I just had a baby and it
That's
kind of,
crazy.
you know, started for you. So and for me personally, of course, it was very interesting to hear your story since now I am postpartum. But yeah.
I was just thinking, what are we going to call this episode? It's probably going to be Hungry for Less Anxiety, featuring Gemma James. And
Hungry for more calm.
Hungry for more calm, that's another option. But I actually like hungry for less anxiety because you just said it there. You're not eliminating anxiety in your life. That's not possible. You're gonna have more anxiety. It comes
It's
up.
natural
It's
though. It's
absolutely normal.
natural as well. And I've literally earlier today, the conversation I was having was about you can't cure anxiety. Literally, anxiety is like your fight and flight response. If you don't have your fight or flight response, you're going to die because then you've got no danger perception. Like
Right.
it keeps us safe. It's just when it almost becomes a bit overactivated
Right.
and we end up dealing with circumstances that don't require such a dramatic reaction from us,
Yeah.
that then it becomes a bit troublesome and ends up stopping us doing what we want to do.
Yeah. Well, you've told us a bit about your story and your background. I'm sure there's much more to it than the little synopsis you just gave, and we'll probably get more into it. But can you tell us a little bit more about what you do as an anxiety mindset coach for your clients and really what your focus is with them?
So I've got a membership that I have, so that it's kind of like an online resource thing where people can access videos. EFT, have you got? Well, you, yeah, okay, you're both familiar, both nodding at me. So EFT, emotional freedom technique, is something else I'm qualified in, and I focus on a lot of that within the membership side of things. So we have different EFT videos, meditations, workbooks around different topics, ranging from calm at Christmas, self-sabotage, inner child healing, kind of different, loads and loads, loads of different topics, for more of like a community-based support. And I also do one-to-one coaching, so like one-to-one calls. And the real focus of it, if you kind of think of, because it's not counselling. I'm very, it's very different to things like counselling. But you often get people assuming because it's kind of within that kind of mental health kind of remit that it would be the same, kind of similar in that you're talking to someone one on one, but it's more propelling you forward. So a lot of clients I get are either having counselling or have had counselling, have kind of talked through the trauma. They understand kind of where it's coming from, but they're still stuck and they want to propel themselves forward, and that's kind of where I come in and get them to where they want to be.
Very cool. Yeah, I think Elisa is very familiar with EFT.
Definitely used it as well. Definitely very helpful.
Yeah.
I
But
discovered it when I was pregnant
oh,
as a
nice.
way to help. That's my first, and I did think it was the daftest thing ever because you're just literally tapping yourself on the head and I was like, it's not working. But
Yeah.
actually, now I swear by it. And
It's
but it's always a bit funny when you try and explain to someone that doesn't know what it is. And I was at a menopause event the other week and I was giving a talk, and it's when you try and explain to people and you're like, you're tapping on these points, and they're just looking at you like, what? What are you talking about? Like, you're crazy. But when you do it on them, or you give them a demonstration, they're like, oh my God, that was so relaxing. I feel so good now. It's definitely one of the things you have to try it, I think, to get the benefits of it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's hard to sell it. It's hard to
It
explain it. It's hard
absolutely,
to sell
absolutely.
it.
It's
One thing that I do like about it though is to me it's meditative, and like if you're not good at meditating and like sitting and shutting down your mind and staying still, like it's you're moving, you're doing something. So
I always describe it as an active meditation
yeah.
because if you're in the throes of anxiety and you're having a panic attack, trying to tell someone like sit down for 10 minutes and just breathe, not going to happen, is it? But if
Oh.
you're focusing on the tapping and you're focusing on the words, it gives your brain a real good point to anchor into. Whereas the breath alone is not always enough when you're really in that kind of heightened state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was that one of the things that you started once you experienced the anxiety during pregnancy, or What did you actually
EFT,
do?
yeah. I used to, before I had Elliot, I was very, I did yoga, I used to meditate, albeit not super religiously, but I was quite, I used to think I was quite calm, you know, I'd overcome anxiety, I was pretty chill. I mean, I really wasn't when I look back. I just used to suppress it a lot, and I would channel it in quite unhealthy ways, which I now see, but at the time I used to think I was fine. And then yeah, during pregnancy I found out about EFT, and then after I become kind of went through a bit of spiritual awakening, really, to be honest. And then I found crystals, and I found got more into EFT, more back into meditation, yoga, and all these kind of more and other sort of modalities, breath work I've since got into quite a lot. And things like that, that probably me 5 or 6 years ago, I would have been like, girl, you're crazy and definitely a hippie now. Like, which is fine. But actually now I swear by all these things. So it's, I think it's one of those things you only discover this stuff when you're ready for it, is very much my experience.
100%. I feel the exact same way. When I learned everything through our coaching program, first I was like, oh my gosh, like all this weird stuff. Like, you really have to be a hippie to be into it. And now I'm into all the same things because they help. They truly do. But like you said, you have to be
Absolutely.
ready for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And but I think this, the same can be said about people that want to work in those kind of modalities, is that you can, it's like the saying that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And sometimes you might say to someone about, oh, you know, I can do EFT, I can do this, and they'll look at you like, I'm not tapping myself on the face. No thanks. Like,
Well,
next.
it doesn't work like you just took a Valium and everything just goes like
You say
well,
that,
maybe not
but
the first time at least.
as someone who's been on very strong medication over the years, I will actually argue that my rate and my stress levels after rounds of EFT would lower quicker than if I'd taken drugs,
Wow, that's awesome.
but without the side effects.
Yes, absolutely. That it's so much better if you can figure it out, right?
For sure. But it's I used to take very high doses of diazepam. Don't know if you guys, yeah. So and I used to be on loads of other medication for anxiety and depression. But it's mad how actually really grounding yourself and centering yourself, the difference that that can make, and how quickly and without the diazepam especially, then you're woozy, then you're like, you're out of it. You
There's
can't
nothing, you know,
focus on anything.
the medication has its place in certain circumstances. I have also taken medication before. I was in a emotionally abusive relationship with a narcissist from age 18 to 20, which I didn't know myself well. I didn't have the words at the time, narcissist and gaslighting, all that stuff is also talked about a lot now. Now I know. Without a doubt, you know what situation I was in. It led me to anxiety medication and antidepressants, and I was a zombie when I took what did I take? Not Valium, not diazepam is another very famous one, and I would take like half of the dose because I would just fall asleep.
I first went on medication, I was 14, and I was on medication. I came off it when I was 28.
Wow, it's a long time.
So, but over that time, loads and loads and loads of different medications, to the point it was like a bit of an ongoing joke in the end that the doctor would be like, right, do you want fluoxetine? No, it makes me, I had issues with eating disorders as well when I was younger, and fluoxetine used to suppress my appetite, so it like made me worse from that. Like telepram, maybe do this. You go through all these different things anyway, and I now look back, and because I used to say at the time, I felt like whenever I was on medication, I was living life through frosted glass. I never felt true excitement or joy or sadness or anger or I didn't feel anything to any kind of extreme. I just kind of felt like watered down versions of everything.
Yeah, when I took it only for 1 year, and I recognized that
I just wasn't feeling much of anything. And I wanted to, I also felt like, and this goes for the depression and also my also being on the medication. I felt like I always had like sunglasses on or like a visor. It was like everything was darker. Nothing was bright. Nothing was exciting, like you were saying. And it's really strange. Your vision literally looks differently. So when you say frosted glass, like it's, I hear you.
It's I think for some people though, that's it's a comfort. Like we're talking about the lady with the mask. It's like it's a comfort for some people. And over that 14-year period, I would go on it, I'd come off it because I didn't like the frosted glass. I'd have another episode back to the doctors. Right, well, let's put you know, I didn't like the way that one made me feel about it. Try this. And that's why I think I ended up going through probably bloody everything they had in their medicine cabinet, to be honest. So by the time I got to 28 and I decided, hungry for more, I'm not listening to these answers. I want more. I want to look into other alternatives. And when I was in a, I went through and I had a horrible divorce and really shitty time in my life, to be honest. I went through and I came out the other side of that and I thought, if I can get through that and not take medication, I can literally get through anything. Like, literally, that
Well,
is it.
it's not that you're not going to. That's the thing. It's like you start to learn how to cope.
Exactly. And funny enough, when I had this episode, this thing happened, I went to the doc because that's what you do, right? You get sick, you go and see a doctor. That's kind of what we have drummed into us. And I was really struggling. They prescribed me some different medication and I had it and I was just like, I'm not doing this again. And I didn't. And not that makes me, it's not a better thing. It's not like a, oh, you know, you shouldn't take medication. It's just that I personally didn't like the way it made me feel. And I think that's the other thing for people to be really mindful of. But it's, if it works for you, amazing. If that makes you better and gives you a better quality of life, absolutely incredible. But if it doesn't, you're not alone with that. And actually, people can get quite, can feel like a bit isolated if they try this thing that the doctor's told them is going to make them feel better and it doesn't have that effect. It's making people aware that there are other options.
Well, and it's I think it's actually quite common that they don't help. Like side effects on antidepressants is depression. That makes
I
anxiety.
know.
It makes no sense. And I know in the UK they don't have commercials for pharmaceuticals, but they do in the United States, and it's very strange that they do. And they'll have these things like, if your antidepressant isn't working, take this along with it to get rid of your depression. I was like, okay,
Is this stuff that
what is
you can go and
the point of this stuff?
buy over the counter, or do you have to get a prescription?
Have to get a prescription.
Oh, that's mad. So you can literally go and ask for the drugs you want.
I think you can try, yes. I have never done
Wow.
that, but I'm also not much into taking meds. As much as I can
I'm
avoid them,
not.
I can, I will, not to say that I haven't before. Like I just said, I did.
Yeah.
But I think that, they have their place. You learn from them. I don't think that people should be on them long term. I think that they have side effects. I think that they change your brain chemistry. The fact that they put you on those at 14 years old when your brain is not even fully developed is actually really scary.
Absolutely. And the other thing as well though with that is I think it's not the cure-all that you then
No.
expect it to be. And I think part of the if you're really we said about the pit of despair earlier, if you're really in the thick of something and you almost just need a little bit of breathing space to be able to really kind of get to grips with what's happened or to maybe you need that frosted glass to be able to actually take a bit of a step back to assess trauma or something like that. Medication for that actually is great. And short-term use, like what you're describing, alongside therapy, counseling, whatever you want to call it, great. It's when you're just given the tablets and that's it. Here's the meds, off you go, no other support. You don't know that any other support is available because it's not advertised. And we do get, I don't know if you guys get any kind of therapy from your doctors in America. In England, they offer something called CBT,
Okay.
which it stands for cognitive behavioral therapy. I've lost track of the amount of times I've been prescribed CBT, and you go along and you have your 6 weeks or your 12 weeks. And for me, it doesn't work. I've tried it so many times in group settings, one to one. That is the support that you get. I think there's some rare bits in the NHS you can get one-to-one counselling, but you don't get very much of it. And the counselling I had, like I say, 12 years or so, I paid for it myself because that's what you end up having to do.
In the United States,
People,
we're very used to paying for medical care for
there
ourselves.
you go. So it's, but it's very, I think if you don't even, it's not even necessarily advertised.
Yeah.
And again, you think, oh, I don't want to go and sit there and pay someone. What am I going to talk to them about? And it is still very, not enough publicized about it.
Oh no, baby's going.
Yeah, baby's here. Well, I wanted to say not only do we have to pay in the US, but also I feel like it's so hard to find a therapist. Like it's so hard. You find some online and then you send emails or you call. It takes forever to hear back. Then they don't take new patients, or you finally have a meeting, then you don't connect, you find a new one. Like it's just by the time you find someone, often like you're already, so beyond what you actually really need. It's just not a good system.
I think worse than ever post-COVID. It is, and there's so many therapists. It's not that. It's just they're so busy post-COVID. Everybody's screwed up from those years of isolation and not getting back to normal. And I would say the grand majority of people are probably experiencing some levels of depression and anxiety from that whole world shift.
100%. But then wouldn't you though? You're literally told, if you leave your house, you're gonna die. If you hug your nan, she's gonna die. Or if you do this, they're gonna die. Just it was constant bombardment. Death, 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 death. These people are dying. That people are dying. And actually, I mean, obviously, loads of stuff now come out since, and it's not quite as bad. I don't know what it's like for you guys, but we had our prime minister was having parties when we was all in lockdown and stuff like that. So there's been loads and loads, loads of stuff that's come out since, and I feel that you've kind of got two camps. You've either got people that are really angry about it and are like the government's rubbish and all this, that, and the other, or you've got these people that genuinely are like still really scared. And like we were saying earlier about like not judging and sort of trying to have compassion for people. And it's like when I do see the people that are like still wearing the mask, still, it does make like I feel sorry for them because it's, how scared must you still be? And you see people that, some people I know that still won't go to the supermarket.
Gosh.
Or you see them walking around every time they touch a surface, they're sanitizing their hands. And it's that fear that a lot of us have now stepped away from, and we're no longer experiencing that. For them, that very much might still be their reality, which
Yeah.
is very sad.
You're being ruled by it, I suppose, you know.
By the
Well,
anxiety.
yeah. One thing I wanted to talk, and you mentioned that you had panic attacks. Can you tell us a little bit about panic attacks? Do you deal with that with your clients? Do you have any
So
information or solutions?
they're different for everyone. People's experience of panic attacks can range from what we see in the films, the hyperventilating, I suppose, is the main one, to attacks of anxiety, being feeling dizzy, feeling breathless, heart palpitations. There can be a number of symptoms. Going for a wee a lot, that's a real symptom, like increased urination, to be more specific or more professional sounding. But these kind of symptoms can indicate that you're kind of going into a fight or flight response, and that can range from person to person. But absolutely something I've experienced, something I probably would argue that most, if not all, of my clients have experienced. Because often these are the things that they tend to find the most debilitating. And that can range from, like, if we're doing something that's really nerve-wracking, like if you're not a particularly confident public speaker and you've got to get up and give a speech or something like that, and you get the panicky feeling. You feel sick, you get the sweaty hands, and you feel like you're literally sweating from everywhere in your body. Some people identify that as being a bit of a panic attack. So the first thing I would say from that perspective is it's unique to everyone. Just because your symptoms don't match maybe what you see in a film doesn't mean that it's not a panic attack. And panic and anxiety can't exist in the present moment. Panic and anxiety is always about either worrying about what's happened or what might happen. So if you can remain rooted in the present moment, anxiety can't live there. So using a grounding technique to get you back to the present moment. One of my favorite ones is the 5-4-3-2-1 method, because you don't need anything for it. And it's literally just looking around you and seeing five things that you can see, and then feeling four things that you can touch, three things that you can hear, two things that you can smell, and one thing that you can taste. And even just saying that, I've had to really use my brain. So I'm very focused in the
What are
present
the
moment. But
things?
when you try and actually do it, and even I because part of the coaching I do, I offer like WhatsApp or Voxer support, as a lot of coaches do. And if I'm ever talking someone down from a panic attack or like a voice note or something, I find myself getting very relaxed. I'm like, five things you can see. And I'll just start looking around. I'm like, oh, I can see that. Because you can't help but bring yourself back into that present moment.
Right, it brings you into your body.
Absolutely. And other things like feeling your feet. So if you're feeling very panicked, and you'd like, right, feel yourself in the chair, feel your feet on the floor, feel your feet through your shoes, through the floor. Imagine, like, what does the carpet beneath your shoes feel like? And really just getting them to focus on something like that, or what colors can you see around you? Loads of different grounding techniques, and there are tons available. There are breathing techniques as well. You can do like box breathing, is a very popular one. But anything like that that gets you out of that what if panic sort of scenario and back into the present moment will eradicate that panic attack. And if you can practice it, the box breathing or breathing especially, it becomes more natural. Like when you're doing hypnobirthing or something like that, and you practice your breathing beforehand, it's because you don't want it to be something alien that you're trying to get your head around in the moment of panic. If it's something that's already ingrained in you, it's something that will be able to calm you down a lot quicker as well.
Panic attacks are scary because if you've never had one and it starts to happen to you, you don't know what's happening. People think that they're dying and they go to the ER.
But the symptoms can be just like a heart attack.
They can, yeah.
Absolutely. And the sensations are so real. Your body genuinely thinks that there is an emergency.
Right, exactly. For me, my very first panic attack during that relationship, well, it came out of nowhere. It was not a circumstance where, like, all of a sudden I understood why I was panicking, but being in that relationship, being with that person in that moment, and I was driving on the freeway, which was really scary in San Diego, which means everyone's driving 70, 80 miles an hour. And I don't know, kilometers, sorry.
I
You
do. We do miles.
do, okay.
Yeah, we do miles in England.
I was like, oh crap, does she not know what I'm saying?
No. Se 70, 70 to 80 miles an hour. I know perfect. If you did kilometers, I wouldn't have had a clue.
Perfect. All of a sudden, we were shopping at the mall, and I just started hyperventilating, and my eyes started streaming tears, and I was driving, and it was very scary, and they were trying to calm me down. It came out of nowhere, and I just had to get through it. I couldn't pull over. I was in the middle. I had to get through it, and we all made it, obviously, but it was very, very scary. And I had more than one in that relationship. But because I've had them now, I know what they are. I think that those strategies that you mentioned would be so helpful if you experience them often. If you're somebody who goes through panic attacks a lot and you need something to help calm you down a little quicker. But sometimes, if you're in a safe place, you just kind of have to. My experience was I just had to get it out.
And the thing as well, though, is that what I said earlier about panic attacks don't always have to be that intense, hyperventilating like what you experienced in the car that time. But it can also be if it's something that you're really worried about. And like even going for an interview or talking about public speaking or could be doing something like this, like someone might be nervous coming on to talk on a podcast or going live on Instagram, or it could be something giving birth. It could be anything that you're particularly worried about can spiral that panic. And sometimes you just need that, like what you experienced, that hyperventilating. That was clearly your body as well releasing something. Releasing those tears were really getting something out. Did you feel quite tired afterwards?
Oh my
Quite
gosh,
exhausted?
exhausted, yeah.
So it's, you know, all of that adrenaline and everything is like pumping through, and it's kind of it's forced its way out
Yeah.
because of obviously sometimes we suppress things. And but often if we're in a situation where that panic is taking over because we've got this heightened response to a situation that doesn't require it, having those calming or grounding techniques just means that we can make more logical decisions in those moments, and that we're able to be a little bit more, well, yeah, logical, I suppose, for want of a better word, about it, rather than running off with what if scenarios and ending up causing ourselves 10 times more panic.
I remember my first panic attack around that time. A family member had passed away. And just like you said, Jess, like it literally feels like you're dying. And I think that that feeling or fear of dying would make it worse. And so I remember then actually having a therapist. And one thing that really helped me was when my therapist told me, you literally cannot die from an anxiety attack. And that helped me. So every time after that, when I had an anxiety attack, I told myself, this is only temporary and you will not die from it. So at least, you know, it didn't make it worse the way it did before, because I literally thought, like, oh my gosh, am I dying from this? Like,
Can't breathe.
can I die from this? Literally.
Crazy.
But it feels like
It
it because
does.
it's literally
It
you
really
can't
does.
breathe. Your heart's pounding out your chest.
Yeah, not fun.
No, definitely not.
I feel like I want to come back to your story a little bit, Gemma. Today, what helps you the most with managing your anxiety? Because, like you said, it's not like it's gone. It's just you
It's
manage it.
I always say prevention's better than cure. So, understanding triggers, understanding that when we are coming from a place of lack of sleep, lack of self-care. So, for example, I don't drink alcohol at all. I'm totally teetotal. And that in part was a decision made because of the reaction that I tend to find that I would have after drinking alcohol, and for other reasons. But I don't drink alcohol. I find if I've eaten a lot of rubbish, so if I've eaten a lot of junk food, things like that, I will notice that I will feel a certain kind of way. And by being more aware of the way that my body reacts to things, stuff as well, like I don't drink caffeine in my luteal phase of my cycle. So in the sort of couple of weeks leading up to my period and during the first sort of few days of my period, I won't drink caffeine or like coffee. Outside of that, I will drink coffee, but like one cup a day and it's in the morning. Things like that, because I notice the effect that caffeine again has on my baseline, shall we say. So I know that then if I was to have a cup of coffee at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, for example, I know I'm going to really struggle to get to sleep. I'm going to feel anxious. My heart's going to be racing. I know it's not actually it's anxiety. It's because of the caffeine. I also know there's certain points in my cycle that I'm more prone to getting triggered by things. So yeah, I would definitely say prevention's better than cure. And for me, it's been kind of getting to understand the different elements of the way that my mind and my body work. Getting to know those parts of myself. and things like breath work I mentioned before, the tapping or EFT, meditation, yoga, all the things that I know increase my tolerance and give me a better resilience or a better baseline to be able to handle the stresses of life. Sleep is not something I can control. That is something I have no control over. If my son decides to sleep through and give me a good night's sleep, brilliant. Does that happen? Not always. Does he get into bed with me and I get kicked in the head 10 times in the night? Yes. So I kind of have to try and factor other things in, because me being able to guarantee I'm going to get 8 hours of solid sleep a night, I'm not the only depending factor in that anymore. So it's trying to find other ways to help with that resilience without needing to depend on the kind of the basic things. Do you know what I mean?
One other thing we would like to know is, are there any myths or misinformation about anxiety or panic attacks? Anything you want to clarify?
Loads of stuff. I think really the fact that having anxiety or experience anxiety doesn't make you weak, doesn't mean that you're any less of a person or anything like that. And as I sort of touched on before, it is a totally natural function. You know, we need that in order to literally survive. And if you feel that you're being held back by that anxiety, or it's sort of stopping you from being able to do what you want to do in life, it's just because your body's overreacting and it's using that fight or flight response in a situation that it doesn't require that level of. You know, you don't need to get out. There's not a saber-toothed tiger chasing after you or a bear or anything like that. And yet our body reacts in the same way as if there were.
Right.
And the other thing as well, I think that the importance of self-care is massively, massively underrated. And that, I know sort of touching it briefly about this kind of that baseline that I refer to, like your resilience. I think that people often want to fix themselves. They want to cure. They want to, you know, I need to fix this. I need to fix that. When actually, rather than focusing on fixing the problem, you need to build that better foundation. And everyone can do that, whether that is taking yourself out for a walk for 10 minutes or going to the gym or eating healthier, or like I mentioned about not drinking caffeine in certain times in your cycle, or whatever that looks like to you. But it's finding things that are going to increase that and they're going to help you feel better. And self-care doesn't necessarily just mean having a bubble bath or going to get a massage. It can be getting therapy. It could be paying for a coach. It could be, like I say, going to the gym. It could be sitting down and reading a book and limiting your screen time, writing a gratitude list. Whatever that looks like to you, it can look different for everyone. But that importance of doing that for yourself goes miles in you being able to handle the stresses of daily life without it flinging you into a panic attack, because you've got more tolerance to deal with life.
Yeah. And I think that you have to try those things. If you're going to keep doing the same things and wonder why you're so anxious and not make a change and see what helps you, then nothing's going to change. If you don't make a change, no. Nothing can change.
Absolutely. And what works for one won't work for another.
And it's up to you. Like you finally took control of it yourself instead of trying to get the doctors to fix you. And that's what ended up helping you.
Absolutely. And ultimately, you go to the doctors, and again, I don't know what it's like for you guys, but you do just get brushed aside. It's not something that's really, in my experience anyway, not something I had a particularly positive experience with, but it's led me to where I am now, which obviously I'm grateful for. But it's, don't always take the first answer you get.
No, I think... You know, I studied psychology. I know what it takes for them to, you know, diagnose somebody with depression or anxiety. And I remember before I knew a lot about psychologists versus psychiatrists and stuff like that, Psychiatrists are the prescribers. And we went to one of those first. And it was after that panic attack on the freeway because they're like, what if that happens again? That's really dangerous. We need to put you on anxiety medication. And he asked me questions and he checked it off on his little list of what it takes to get diagnosed. And he wrote me a script and I was out that door. That was it. That was the help that I received. It's, they know nothing
But
besides.
you don't even need to be a psychiatrist in the UK. It's just a GP.
A GP can do it here too.
You just go to the doctor. It's like, yeah, I feel a bit depressed. They're like, oh, yeah, see you later.
I know. It's crazy. So I think that therapy is a much better step because at least you're trying to get to the root of why things are coming up for you, why you have these anxieties. And then with the why, it's now what, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Gemma. Is there anything else, Jess? If not,
Is there anything else, Gemma, that we didn't bring up that you think was
no, it's
okay?
been lovely. Sorry if I've chatted too much.
There's no such thing.
I'm a waffler.
No, we love it. Well, before we end, we would like to see if you have any great resources that you want to share, any other podcasts, books, Instagram handles besides the one of viewers, of course. We want to learn about that too. Anything that you have to offer, yeah, share it with us.
There is a book, it's quite old, but it's very, very good. And it's called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. It's by Dale Carnegie. You know the book, How to Win Friends and Influence
Oh,
People?
yeah. Okay.
He did a book about anxiety.
Okay, we'll link it in notes.
I'm just making sure I'm getting How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. I read that quite early on in my journey. It was recommended to me by someone, and the amount of light bulb moments I had with that book, I was like, oh my God, yeah. Oh, and that, yeah. Other books I found really, really helpful. There's one, Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. For me, health anxiety was the major trigger for me after having Elliot. So that book really kind of helped me put things into perspective and helped me to understand perhaps how suppressing certain emotions or not feeling things that need to be felt, how that could have an adverse effect on my health and help me understand where things might be coming from. I mean, there are so many Instagram pages, to be honest. There are a few that I follow that are sort of about health anxiety and stuff like that, but the thing I would maybe say with that, one big caveat is that if anything triggers you on social media, just unfollow it. Because if you're not ready to be watching, to be linked up with someone that, for example, for me, cancer was my big trigger after having my son. And glutton for punishment, I don't know why I used to do it. I used to follow all these people that were going through cancer treatment. I don't know why I used to do that to myself.
We're learning.
You're right. So I unfollowed all of them, and one of them was a friend of a friend, and it was, I didn't want to unfollow because I didn't want her to think I was being like, do you know what I mean? It was a bit awkward. But actually, I reached out to her and I said, look, I'm unfollowing you. It's nothing personal, but this is my reason. And she was fine about it. But just that would be my big advice where social media is concerned. Things like a book are great because A, you're limited your screen time, and B, it's kind of controlled what you're going to be looking at. But the algorithm does crazy things, and if you've got stuff in your feed that is triggering you even a little bit, just get rid of it, because otherwise it's only going to show you more of it and you end up down a rabbit hole, and next thing you know it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you're having a panic attack. It's not a good look. So
It's true. It's a
limit
good
your social
point.
media.
Yeah. Well, thank you
Yes.
so much, Gemma, for coming on Hungry for More. This was a very interesting conversation. Where can people follow you? And if there's any programs or anything going on that you have, where can they sign up?
So I'm just Gemma L. James on Instagram. My website is gemmaljames.com. So that keeps things nice and easy. As far as working with me, I don't really do programs as such. It's just if people need support, I've got my membership and I've got my coaching. So yeah, always happy to help. And if it's something that you don't necessarily want coaching or you don't know, or you just want to chat, I'm always also willing and happy to have a chat with people as well.
Perfect. We will link
Awesome.
all of those in the show notes so you can go find Gemma. And thanks so much again for being here.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely chatting to you both. And yeah, thank you.
Yes, it was so fun. Thank you. And to all of our listeners, thank you also for listening, for being here. We always appreciate you. Don't forget to save this episode, send it to friends who may need it, and make sure to subscribe and always leave us a 5-star rating. Until next time,
stay hungry. Bye, friends.
Bye.